Well, we're glad that you're here today worshiping with us. We're going to dive right into week three of our Into the Wilderness series. We've been on this wilderness journey. We started kicked this thing off with the sin of Adam and Eve, and we just looked at how that was the beginning of the wilderness journey, yes, for Adam and Eve, but ultimately for us, for all of humanity. And we just looked at how, even in the midst of that, God was still there. He's still with us. He still provides. He still protects, and his promises still hold true. After that, we fast forwarded a little bit. We got into Abraham's story and how God called him, right? Sent him out into the wilderness. And as he did, there was this promise, right? That there would be a nation that would come from him. And then in the midst of the wilderness journey of being sent out into the unknown and not sure how things are going to go, then God says, I want you to sacrifice my son. And we just look through all the things that happened in Abraham's life, the wilderness journey, and how God's promises hold true, and he is good in all the things that he calls us to. And so we're going to keep the journey going. We're going to skip forward a little bit, and we're going to dive into Exodus now. We're going to look at Moses' story. And what I want to tell you about Moses is that really, if you, and I'm going to share with you in just a minute, like if you look at an overview of his life, Moses' journey is one of going from one wilderness season to another wilderness season to another wilderness season until ultimately, you know, I know where he takes his last breath. In the wilderness. Anyway, so let me just show how this takes place. So, like as a baby, when we kick this thing off, the first thing that happens, the first wilderness that happens, is he's placed in a basket as a baby into the Nile River, and mom's like hoping for the best. Okay, so there's a wilderness journey there, and then as a child, he grows up in the house of Pharaoh. No longer is he with his family, or he's not growing up in his heritage, and so that is also a wilderness journey for him as a child. And then as a young man, he comes to a moment where he murders somebody and then has to flee and literally go out into the wilderness out of fear. And then for the next 40 years, he spends in the wilderness, and God just kind of begins to reshape his identity, ultimately preparing Moses for the wilderness that God was going to send him into next. And so, you know, if you've ever heard Moses' story, there's this amazing moment, this miraculous moment. Moses is out in the wilderness, and this bush is on fire and just starts talking to God. Anyone ever experienced that in their life? If so, we need to get you help. And so there's this moment, and God, through the burning bush, what's he do? He says to Moses, I want you to go back. Go back to Egypt. Go back to the place that you left. Go back to the place that is a wilderness, right? It's dangerous there for him. It's unpredictable there for him. And there are many, many painful memories that he left behind. And God says, go back there. And not only go back there, then God says, I'm going to give you kind of an impossible wilderness task. I need you not only to go back, but I need you to confront Pharaoh and tell Pharaoh to let my people go. And then, if that's not enough, then you're going to lead my people out of Egypt into what? Into the wilderness so that they can get to the promised land. And so the story, again, is just wilderness, wilderness, wilderness. God working, God moving, God preparing. And I, you know, of course, I can't address all the things that Moses learned and all the wilderness lessons, but we're going to focus on one today. We're going to look at the moment that led to a sinful act. That led to, you know, circumstances and consequences causing fear. And ultimately, Moses, you know, fleeing into the wilderness in his life. And as we explore, what you're going to see is that Moses' wilderness journey is about removing a false identity and God coming alongside him to repair his true God-given identity. And so we're going to look at Exodus 2, verse 11 through 15. But before we get there, let me give you a quick setup. I kind of gave you a broad overview of his whole story, but let me just set up before we get to verse 11 in Exodus chapter 2. So you open up the book of Exodus, and what you find is that the Pharaoh of that time issues a decree that all Hebrew baby boys are to be killed, okay? Now Moses' mother, along with some Hebrew midwives, they hide Moses for a time being. And when he gets a little bit older, Moses' mother decides, you know what, I can no longer hide him. So I am going to kind of give him over and I'm going to trust that God's going to lead him. And so she places him in this basket in the Nile and away he goes. And what does God do? He protects him. And so Pharaoh's daughter happens to be bathing in the Nile, sees the baby boy in the basket. And what does she do? She rescues him and adopts him into her family. And so now Moses grows up as an Egyptian, not a Hebrew. And what happens is as he grows up, he's trained in the ways of Egypt. He's trained by their values and their culture, about worship of their gods. And he's also trained in leadership style. And he begins to model or see how leadership is modeled by the Egyptians. It is force, it is intimidation, and it is power. And so all of this is shaping who he's becoming as a man. But in the meantime, he still hasn't forgotten about where he came from, about his heritage as a Hebrew son. And that's where we get to this defining moment, this moment that exposes really this false identity and the tension that he is living in. So Exodus 2, verse 11, it says, years later, after Moses had grown up, he went out to his own people and observed their forced labor. He saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his people. Looking around and seeing no one, he struck the Egyptian dead and hid him in the sand. The next day, he went out and saw two Hebrews fighting. He asked the one in the wrong, "Why are you attacking your neighbor? Who made you a leader and judge over us?" The man replied, "Are you planning to kill me as you killed the Egyptian?" Then Moses became afraid and thought, "What I did is certainly known." And when Pharaoh heard about this, he tried to kill Moses. But Moses fled from Pharaoh and went to live in the land of Midian, and he sat down by a well. And so this passage kind of just gives us a glimpse into this tension that Moses has been living in and has been feeling, right? Because there's between the Egyptian that he was raised to be and the God-given heritage as an Israelite. And not just any Israelite. If you look, you'll see that Moses was born as a Levite, to a Levite, and so he has this priestly descent. So you have this tension, it comes to this climax. When he sees an Egyptian, which he was raised to be, beating a Hebrew, which he also is. And so he's in this moment of conflict. He feels for his people, for his heritage. He sees that there's injustice, but he responds to it in the way that he was raised, through force and through domination. And while you look at it and you go, yeah, Moses' motives were good, right? Seeing this, wanting to do something about it, going, what is happening is not good. He cared about the injustice. However, he acted from a false identity. He acted in his own strength. And what we know from the story, because we know how it ends, God would one day call Moses to rescue his people from the injustice and lead his people into the promised land, but that day was not this day. Moses wasn't ready to do what God was going to call him into. Moses needed time to remove and repair his false identity so that he could reclaim his true identity. And you want to know where that would happen? In the wilderness. It would be away from Egypt. It would even be away from his people. And so God, through this whole ordeal, is Moses goes out and he's working on it. But it's like, you look at everything that's taken place up to this point. Like, you look at Moses' life at this point. It's tough. And so at the very beginning, what did Pharaoh want to do? Kill him. Okay? And so he doesn't get killed by Pharaoh, but then Pharaoh becomes one of the people that shapes his identity. Wanted to kill you. Now you're in my household, so I guess I'll shape you to be one of our own. As he grows up, he's acting as an Egyptian. He kills an Egyptian, and guess what Pharaoh wants to do again? Kill him. And you just, enter into this mode, right? And Moses has been with the Egyptians for, 30-plus years, right? And he knew this guy wanted to kill him, but he was in his household, and now he wants to kill him again. It's like this roller coaster of emotions, as well as just immense identity confusion. The guy who raised me or helped raise me in his household, he wants me dead. The people that I'm over here trying to help, trying to protect, trying to care for, they don't want me as their leader. And what's he going? He's going, where do I belong? What is my identity? Pharaoh finds out, wants to kill him. And so in fear, Moses, he flees. And yes, he's fleeing from Egypt. But I look at this story and I go, no, what he's really fleeing from is who he had become. The person that he'd become. The false identity that he had taken on. And so he was running from the only life he ever knew, and I think he's hoping that he would find the life that he was meant for. And God meets him there in the wilderness. God uses this season that he's in to repair and to reclaim his identity. So let's jump back into the story. Exodus 2, verse 16. Remember, Moses decided to just chill at a well, okay? You're out there in the wilderness. You want to be near water. Okay, so it's a good spot. And so now, the priest of Midian had seven daughters. Things are already looking up. Seven daughters come to you, so you're great. Okay, just a little joke there. Okay, and they came to draw water and filled the trough to water their father's flock. Then some shepherds arrived and drove them away, but Moses came to their rescue and watered their flock. When they returned to their father, he asked, "Why have you come back so quickly today?" They answered, "An Egyptian rescued us from the shepherds. He even drew water for us and watered the flock." "So where is he?" he asked his daughters. "Why then did you leave the man behind? Invite him to eat dinner." Moses agreed to stay with the man, and he gave his daughter Zipporah to Moses in marriage. She gave birth to a son whom he named Gershom, for he said, "I have been a foreigner in a foreign land." And you can just kind of see like all these things taking place, and he's trying to find his place. He's trying to find his identity. They even call him an Egyptian. They don't even know he's of Hebrew descent. And he's just, he names his son, "I'm a foreigner in a foreign land." He's still struggling. And up to this point, we kind of see what's begun to shape his identity. And I look at it from a father figure kind of standpoint. So he had two father figures. The first one is his biological father, right? He's the first identity influencer. He is the one who gave him life, who gave him a name, who gave him his inheritance. Again, he's born as a Hebrew in the line of Levites. And so we got that. We go, okay, Moses has that. He's holding on to his heritage. The second father or father figure is the Pharaoh or Pharaoh's household. And this is a false identity influencer, right? They shaped him to be forceful, to be strategic, to be life-taking. And so this is what he's wrestling. This, when he finds himself at the well in the wilderness, he's trying to decide, who am I? And who's going to help me figure out who I am? And so then the third father figure rolls in, right? It's Jethro, who becomes his father-in-law. And I look at this third father figure and I go, this is the reclaiming identity influencer. It's no coincidence that there's some details that are included here. Jethro is a priest, okay? And so now, remember, Moses was born into the line of priests, and now he meets a man who is a priest, and it's connecting him back to his heritage, back to who he was meant to be. And he begins to teach him how to protect and how to provide and how to guide life, to be life-giving. Through Jethro, Moses gains a wife, gains a family. Exodus 3:1 tells us he gains purpose. He becomes a shepherd. And from all of this, from this third father figure entering in, we see these wilderness lessons that begin to reclaim Moses' God-given identity. First, he marries and has a family. And in that, he's never experienced this before, in that he is learning how to love and lead. But not only love and lead, but also to be someone who produces life. This is going all the way back to God's original call to be fruitful and multiply. And so God's bringing him back in. You're meant for this. I want to show you how to love and how to lead in your family, in your personal life first. And then I'm going to show you something else. And the second thing that happens is he becomes a shepherd. And as a shepherd, guess what he's learning to do? He's learning how to protect for and provide the flock that he has been given. And so you take all this information, right? And you look at the stark difference between the false Egyptian identity that he was living in and his true God-given identity. The first identity, the false one, was kind of built on force. And you see it play out. There's control, there's domination, there's taking matters into their own hands. It's about power, it's about position, and it's about proving yourself. And in the end, that identity is an identity that is life-taking. And in Moses' case, literally, he takes life in this false identity. But then we compare it to the God-given identity, and that identity is not built on force, it's built on relationship. And this is so key. It's caring, it's protecting, it's providing, and it's guiding. This is not about control. It's about stewardship, right? Stewarding well what God has given you. This is not about power. No, it's about presence, about being there, about making these relationships work no matter what happens. And what we'll find is in this identity is life-giving. Not only in his own life, but also for his family. And then the calling that God would place in Moses is life. He would be one that comes along and cares for, provides, protects, and guides life. And so through the wilderness, God shows Moses how to lead and care for people. Not the Egyptian way, not in Moses' false identity, but God's way. But you got to understand, before Moses could step into his God-given identity, he had to endure a wilderness that would reshape and repair the false identity that had already been formed in him. And so 40 years, he's in the wilderness. 40 years, he's out there. He's run from his problems, right? He's trying to forget the pain of the past. He's trying to forget all the things that happened to him, and he's being restored. And God is working in him. And at this moment, God calls Moses in his restored identity to then go and rescue his people from Egypt. The very thing he tried to do in his own power, God says, now you're ready and you're going to do it in my power. Now, there's this very key moment that I want to show you. There's this, when he's talking to God in the burning bush, and God says something that I think it stood out to me, and I want to connect it to what's happening here. So let's jump into that story. Exodus 3, verse 9. The Israelites' cry for help has come to me, and I have also seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. Therefore, go, I'm sending you to Pharaoh so that you may lead my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. But Moses asked God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh? Who am I that I should bring the Israelites out of Egypt? And you can feel it in this question that Moses is going, God, do you know what I've done? Do you know the life that I lived? Do you know where you're sending me back to and the things that I've done there and what the Egyptians feel about me and even what the Israelites feel about me? God, who am I? Why would you send me? And God answered, I will certainly be with you. And this will be a sign to you that I've sent you. When you bring the people out of Egypt, you will all worship God at this mountain. He's like, listen, you're going to go and you will come back. I know you think you're going to fail. I know you think you're going to mess up, but I'm sending you in my power. And when you're done, you're going to come right to this spot, and I'm going to affirm and confirm all that I told you and all I'm doing in you and even where I'm sending you. Go. Moses, this whole conversation, Moses is like, I'm just not the right guy. I don't think I'm who you need. And he's, again, still struggling in who he was, not willing to let go of the past and step into the thing that God is calling him to. And so we get to Exodus 4, verse 1. Then Moses answered, well, what if they won't believe me and will not obey me, but say, the Lord did not appear to you? You're a liar, bro. We know you're the guy that killed the guy, and you ran, and it's not you. This is how the Lord responds, and it's one of those things you go, this is powerful. And all he says to him, as he asks this question, he says, what is in your hand? Kind of an odd question, right? To ask, as Moses is asking a question, he just goes, bro, what's in your hand? And Moses says, a staff. After 40 years in the wilderness, God speaks. And first Moses asks the same question I think we all ask. Who am I? God, you know me. You know I've messed up. You know I've made mistakes. You know why I am where I am. We ask God this question, and we question that he's calling us, and God just begins to remind Moses, it's not about who you were, it's who I'm calling you to be. God doesn't answer Moses with a title. He doesn't remind Moses of his past. You know what he points to? What's in his hand. And what's in his hand represents something so powerful. You know what was in his hand? It was a shepherd's staff. And it speaks to a new identity that Moses now has. And God is trying to remind him of it. Like, we often attach our identity to something. It could be a job. It could be our title. It could be money. It could be our past. It could be our upbringing. It could be our mistakes. It could even be someone else. We often attach who we are to someone or something that we've done. And so I go, it's no coincidence that God's going to go, what's in your hand right now? In this moment, he is reminding Moses of who he has become in the wilderness. A transformation has taken place. Who you were 40 years ago is not who you are right now. And of course, Moses, for him, it's this bringing all of it back up. It's bringing to mind not what's in his hand right now, but what his hands once did. And so there's this powerful thing. And you know, I think God's asking, because the very thing that led Moses in the wilderness is the very thing that God is going to restore so he can lead his people out of Egypt. And so you go back to this moment that, of course, Moses is thinking about as God's calling him to go back to Egypt. He's recalling when he last left. You go back to Exodus 2, verse 11. He saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his people, looking around and seeing no one. He struck the Egyptian dead and hit him in the sand. And we're not told exactly how he did it, but we are given a glimpse of how he went about it. What's he doing in this moment? He sees something happen. It's injustice. And he doesn't, like, approach it right then. You know what he does? He starts looking around. He's like, who's going to see what I'm about to do? He wants to make sure that no one knows. He doesn't want the Hebrews to look down on him and go, that guy's a murderer, even though he's helping us. He doesn't want word getting back to Pharaoh, because that guy tried to kill him, and he knows how he leads. And so he's looking around. He's like, okay, no one sees me. No one's looking. I'm gonna make this happen. I'm gonna get this done. I believe Moses needed this to be quick, and he needed to be quiet, so that he can be like, nothing happened. I don't know what happened to that guy. He wasn't looking good in the first place. Probably died of natural causes. Don't know what to tell you. Get a new one in. And so in this moment, right, as I pondered that, I concluded that it would be quiet. Like, he would want it to be much quicker and quieter, right? And so you think about that. How is he going to make it quick and quiet? Do you think him going up behind the man and, like, getting into a fist fight is going to be quick and quiet? No, I'm going, you know what happened? That dude grabbed something and said, whack, right? And just knocked him out flat. And then I'm going, after that, he probably made sure that he was finished off. I don't know how he did it. I don't know if he strangled him. I watch a lot of murder mystery shows, and I'm just like, there are some things that I think happened in this moment, and I'm going, if he wants it to be quick, if he wants it to be quiet, then he's going to have to, like, take the guy out first and then stab him a few times and then bury him, okay? Last service, I told everyone I think like a murderer. I meant to say I think like a detective. So anyway, there's that. These are the things I think about when I'm reading God's word. Like, well, I wonder how this went down. I wonder if anyone's there investigating. You know, anyway, okay. And so, like, I'm looking at all of this, and I'm going, like, he can't afford for the Egyptian to cry out for help, or for him to make a scene, or to get away. And so you take into consideration the place, like, where they're at, right? And so Moses has got some options. And there's a possibility that he just grabbed what was ever in his environment. It could have been a brick. It could have been a tool that the Hebrew slaves were using. He could have even gotten some weapon, some rod, something that the overseers used to discipline the slaves. Being an Egyptian of high rank, he may have even had his own dagger or sword, or even his own rod that signified his authority there. And so you just You take all this into consideration, right? We don't know for certain how it went down, but you take some things contextually into consideration, and you take some creative license, and it is plausible that Moses used an Egyptian rod or something similar to quickly strike down and murder the overseer and then bury him there. And now you connect it back to God's question. What is in your hand? It's a shepherd's staff. And then you look at these two things. And really, it's two different identities we're looking at. And so we can look at this rod of oppression of the Egyptians and what it symbolizes, right? It's a tool of control. It's used to strike and harm. It represents Egypt's dominance. It is authority through fear, and it enforces slavery. And that's the life that he left. And then you get to what was in his hand now, right? A shepherd's staff. I'm calling it of salvation. This is a tool of care. It's used to guide. It's used to protect. It represents God's calling on his life. It's authority through relationship, and it leads to freedom. Now, at the end of the day, however it happened, however it went down, whether he used something in his hands or his own hands, what it represents is the deeper truth. In that moment, Moses acted like an Egyptian. He was forceful. He was controlling. He used power, and he took life into his own hands. And now God is calling him to act like a shepherd, to be relational, to be caring, to be guiding, to be protecting of the life that has been entrusted to him. And so whatever was in his hand 40 years ago, we know this, it brought death by Moses' own plan in his own strength. And now what's in his hand brings life through God's plan and God's divine power. In this moment, God is revealing to Moses this, that he didn't need a forceful tyrant to lead his people. He needed a servant that would shepherd his people. And so God takes the ordinary tool of a shepherd, and he turns it into an instrument of divine power. And if you continue to read about Moses' story and read through Moses' story, you're going to see the staff show up again and again and again. First, he heads back to Egypt. He's using the staff to do the miracles and perform the plagues. And ultimately, the staff helps him lead the people out. They get to this moment at the Red Sea. Do you know what he uses? As God parts the Red Sea, he uses the staff. There's a moment where there's a battle taking place, and Moses is seen up on a hill. You know what he's holding up his staff, and they achieve victory. He even takes the staff, strikes a rock, and water comes flowing out. And so what this staff symbolizes is Moses' wilderness journey, how God repaired his identity and restored his purpose. Moses entered the wilderness a murderer, but he emerges as a shepherd. And this is such a powerful truth for you and I. I want to say it like this. The mistakes that lead us into the wilderness do not have to become our identity. They do not have to remain our identity. God wants to reclaim and repair and reshape you in the wilderness. We've got to let go. Like, we struggle to let go, don't we? And it's as hard enough as for us in our own lives to let go of what we did. We also got people around us that keep reminding us of our past, of our failure, of our mistakes. And they label us by the things that we did. But God, listen to me, God reshapes our past failures for his future purposes. That's just who God is. And that is what he wants to do in your life. That's what he did in Moses' life. He's got something for you. We're not defined by what led us into the wilderness. We're defined by what God does in us through it, and more importantly, how we choose to leave it. Does that make sense? Are we going to leave in our false identity, or are we going to leave, are we going to step out in our new God-given identity? You see, when God shaped Moses, or who God shaped Moses to be in the wilderness, is exactly who he needed to be to lead his people out of Egypt and get them to the land that God promised to them. And so when you and I, when we allow God to repair our identity in the wilderness, we no longer need to hold on to what sent us there. If you keep holding on to who you were, to how you failed, or even how others have failed you, if you keep holding on to the false identity that was given to you by others or by circumstance, you're never going to fully step into the identity that God has for you. And you may be in a wilderness season right now. You may be going through it. You may be asking questions. You may be wondering why. In the meantime, God's going, listen, stop thinking about what happened, what you did, what was done to you, and start listening to what I want to do through you right now. What's in your hand? Who have you become? How have I molded you? How have I shaped you? Here's what I want to do. I want to enter into a time of prayer, a time of reflection. I'd ask you to bow your heads, close your eyes. As you settle in to just spend some time talking to God and hearing from God, I'm going to ask the same question to you. What's in your hand? What's in your hand right now? And that could be different, because you may be in the beginning of a wilderness season. You may be in the middle of one. You may be at the end of one. The question becomes, what is in your hand? What are you still holding on to? What mistake of the past? What sin? What failure? What have you been unwilling to relinquish so that God can restore you and redeem you into what he has for you? Is what's in your hand continuing to harm you? Is it continuing to harm others and harm the relationships that God has put around you? Is what you're holding on to keeping you from what God has for you? First thing you need to do is you need to let go. Stop holding on to the pain of the past. Stop holding on to the shame of the past. Stop holding on to the regrets of the past. Stop identifying yourself by your sin and by your failure. Give those things to God. Be forgiven and be redeemed. Maybe you find yourself in the middle of a wilderness journey. Something sent you there. It might have been a mistake. It might have been a calling. It might have been a failure. It might have been just a journey of finding your identity. The question then becomes, what has God done and what has he done it for? What's in your hand right now? What God has done in your life up to this moment isn't just to fix your past false identity. It's also to have you to step into your God-given calling. Like he's doing something in you so that he can do something through you. Not just for you, but for others. All of us are called into God's family. And as we're called into God's family, we're called to be like shepherds, act like shepherds, to guide, provide, protect, care for all life that is entrusted to us. What is God asking you to do with how he has shaped you in your wilderness? Maybe it is something impossible. Maybe it is something overwhelming. Maybe right now, God has said, you're ready to go back to where the pain started and fix the problem for others that are there still experiencing it. Don't ignore that. I know it's hard, but guess what? Just like he told Moses, God goes with you. As he sends us into any wilderness, he goes with us. He provides, he cares, he protects. Step into that. I don't know who, I don't know what has shaped your identity. I don't know what you've come to believe as your identity. I don't know if it's a pursuit of a career or money or a relationship, a bad growing up with your relationship with your father or your mother. I don't know any of that. But I do know this, you have a heavenly father who loves you so much that he sent his son Jesus to die on the cross so that you could be forgiven and claim your God-given identity through his resurrection. And so if you're still believing the lie of the enemy and allowing the false identity of culture and the circumstances to control you, it is time to surrender it at the foot of the cross. Put it where it belongs, in the grave. And then be resurrected into new life in Jesus Christ. God, right now, I pray that as your spirit moves, that as you reveal our false identity, as you reveal things we're holding on to, as you reveal what you're calling us into, God, that we would fully surrender our lives to you. That we'd stop giving excuses, that we'd stop holding on to the past, and we'd say, today, I'm ready to step where you're leading because I believe you go with me. And I believe that I've been given a God-given identity and purpose, and I'm ready to see what you're going to do in me and through me. God, thank you Thank you for each wilderness journey. They're hard, they're tough, there's conviction, there's hardship, there's trial. But through it all, you are shaping us, you are reclaiming us, you are repairing us, and you call us sons and daughters. And that's what we walk out in. God, I pray that for everybody in this room, that you would just move in them and move them in the direction that you're calling them. It's in Jesus' name that I pray. Amen.